Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Extra Sauce Podcast.
It's my fancy sauce.
I want some fancy sauce.
Yeah.
I'm not done using it.
With the czar of sauces, Greg Hill.
Let's get started. The anticipation is killing me, Shoe.
Oh, yeah.
It's certainly one of the highlights of my 26 years on the radio. This particular guest that we're going to talk to in a moment on the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're going behind the ear moth,
and this is truly, like, in its purest form, an ear moth.
This is
the epitome.
One hit wonder.
Yeah.
1972.
Yeah.
Everybody has sang it at a bar late night.
Yep.
A lot of people don't know. If you asked them who the artist was, they would have no frigging idea.
Right.
It's been
in TVs.
TV, movies.
Movies. Yeah.
It's a tale of unrequited love.
Yep.
Between a sailor and a barmaid.
Oh, you're giving away too much.
Oh, I am? Okay. All right. So on the podcast this week, we go behind the behind the ear moth.
Yes.
And then after that, we were on the show this week. We were discussing the horror that is the traffic in our region and how it never gets better, even after the big dig. And so Shu has tracked down a national traffic analyst, an engineer.
One that was willing to talk to us.
Yes. And we're going to find out why the big dig did nothing to make the traffic better, and why it seems like it's worse. Like, it seems it's worse to me. Like, I come into the city for events and stuff. A weeknight, I can't get. I got to leave an hour and a half.
Maybe you're just not used to it.
Maybe
because you don't drive yourself very often.
I drive myself occasionally. But it just, I mean, it's nuts. So we'll get to that. But let's begin with this.
It's time to go behind the ear moth on the Extra Sauce Podcast.
It is a distinct honor to welcome Elliot Lorry to Extra Sauce. He is the lead singer of Looking Glass, a band that had a number one hit in 1972 with Brandy, You're a Fine Girl.
Oh, you don't even have to hear the song.
No.
Just the title, and it's already echoing in my brain.
You're already going, Elliot, thank you for joining us on Extra Sauce.
Yes.
I got to tell you, this may be, no, it's not maybe. This is the culmination, the highlight of my 26 years in broadcasting. It is amazing to have you on the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
I'm flattered to hear that, and I'm glad to be with you.
Brandy was my dad's favorite song, and so I heard it frequently on a 45 record on the big, gigantic record player that we had over and over again as a kid. And I've always wondered, I've often wondered, who was that fine girl, Brandy? Was that a woman that you knew? Was that had you heard an old... had you encountered an old sailor who had told you this story?
Actually, no. The story itself is made up. I was pretty active in high school and college as a writer of fiction. And when I started writing songs, I found that I was pretty good at writing those kind of linear stories, and better at that than I was at songs loaded with metaphors and all. But the name came, the name Brandy came from a high school sweetheart of mine. Her name was actually Randy with an R. And I wrote the song, as I often do, just playing some chord changes and singing whatever came to mind over it. And I was singing her name over it. And when the story started to come together about a barmaid, I said, well, she should be Brandy, not Randy. So that's where that came from.
Yeah, I guess it wouldn't sound the same if it was Randy, you're a fine girl. I mean, I think it's, yeah.
No, it would not. And there's a little ambiguity about that name, too.
Yeah. were you ever able to, and of course, I would be the one to think about this based on my history, but were you ever able to go back and demonstrate to Randy what a success you would become by writing a hit song, changing the letters, and were you able to use that to get her back or anything?
Well, I didn't try to attempt to get her back, but I did reconnect with her, as you do with a lot of people, through the wonder of Facebook. So I reconnected with her a number of years ago, and she is living where she has always lived, up in the Pacific Northwest. And incredibly, because she's about my age, just about 7 or 8 years ago, took up art, doing pastels. And she's quite excellent at it, and I bought one of her paintings, so I have an original Randy or original Brandy hanging in my home.
That's pretty cool.
She didn't ask for a check or anything, right?
Yeah. Did she want? Well, speaking of a check, I always think it's so interesting. How many copies of Brandy have been sold? Well in the millions, right?
Well, I really don't know the answer to that, because when we got a gold record for it way back when it was a hit, and back in those days, a gold single represented 1 million physical sales of singles. You know, nowadays, between the downloads and the streaming, it's hard to find accurate numbers. But, you know, I will tell you this, that when I see the results of streaming, I mean, there are millions and millions of streams of it every 3 months, so it's still out there.
but you guys really didn't make a lot of money off of the song. I was reading about, you made some money because you wrote it, but the guys in the band really didn't make money till like 1999 or something. Is that right?
Well, we kept getting statements from the record company up until about the late 90s that showed that we were still unrecouped, you know, that our account was unrecouped. And if you or your listeners know much about record company bookkeeping, it's not terribly uncommon for them to tell you, well, you haven't recouped your advance yet, or you haven't recouped the expenses of making the album. But finally, but in the late 90s, we finally got into the plus column.
Well, that's good. Yeah.
20 years.
Yeah. I was also reading that oftentimes you will meet people. Looking Glass is a New Jersey band. And that you will meet people in New Jersey randomly who will tell you that they were in Looking Glass, and that they're the. Is that correct?
They don't tell me, but I have gotten lots of messages from people all around the country, not only in New Jersey, saying, "Hey, I met the guy who was your bass player," you know, and unfortunately the guy who was the bass player in Looking Glass passed away many years ago.
So there's guys running around saying, "Hey, I sing that song, Brandy." Like they're at karaoke or they're right. at a bar, yeah. And they're like, "Yeah, I sang that. I had a hit with that song in 1972."
Well, you know what? That's a testament to the song again. Not only are people still playing it and downloading it, but guys are still saying they were in Looking Glass to try to get laid.
Yeah. I guess they figure nobody really knows who was in Looking Glass. Right. Nobody knows Brandy. So, you know, I'll raise my hand that I was in the band.
Is it true that the name Brandy in 1973 became way more popular than it ever was before because of the song?
I've seen statistical information that shows that after 1972, the number of girl babies who were named Brandy shot up astronomically.
That's amazing. You affected the human race, dude. That's amazing.
I also was interested to learn that the band sounded an awful lot different than the song Brandy, yeah. And that actually affected, you may say differently, but that actually affected your career, because there were a lot of people, and this happens with bands sometimes, there were a lot of people going to your shows expecting to hear this yacht rock-like Looking Glass band, and you guys were actually a pretty hard rock band. Is that right?
Yeah, well, we came up as a bar band and as a fraternity band. We went to Rutgers University, and we became quite popular as a a bar band. We would do six sets a night of covers, and we were a quartet, you know, guitar, bass, drums, and keyboards. So our sound was pretty, you know, sort of garage rock, band rock. And, you know, Brandy, we aimed for a hit record with that. So, you know, it's quite produced, and it has the horn section on it. It's got one of the great session percussion players from the day playing on it. And when we traveled, we didn't have the horns or any of that kind of stuff. And we also had another writer in the band beside myself, who I thought was an excellent writer, but his style was very different than mine. It was a little more rock-edged. So, yeah, once we had the hit and then we'd come out and play, not much of our set sounded a lot like the Brandy record. And it was, you know, it was tough to... it was tough to build a live career when we sounded so different from the hit.
So they didn't expect to see a bunch of long-haired hippie types when they went to see Looking Glass, is that right?
Yeah, and we were lucky there were no music videos.
Were you guys, by any chance, coming up in New Jersey the same time bar-wise that that the great Bruce Springsteen was?
We were, actually, although we did not cross paths that often because his band, which I think was called Steel Mill at the time, was Bruce's bar band, and they played more in on the shore, and we played more sort of in the central Jersey and then sort of west towards Pennsylvania. But we were very aware of them. I mean, you know, as I say, we were sort of a hot bar band, and so were they. So we were aware of them.
The Paul Stanley said that that song inspired Hard Luck Woman. Do you hear from other artists, or have you heard over the years from other artists that Brandy was an influence on them?
I've heard less specific things than that, although I have heard that story about the Paul Stanley track. Yeah, I've heard less specific things than that, but like people, you know, who have written other sort of story songs, you know, saying that they were influenced by Brandy, yeah.
And what about covers? Kenny Chesney does one. Do you have a favorite Brandy cover?
I really like the Kenny Chesney version. It's very faithful to the original, you know, but it's got a little of the Kenny and the Jimmy Buffett kind of flavor to it. So I really quite like his. And the Red Hot Chili Peppers one is really good, too, because they kind of sound the way we sounded doing it in the bar, because they're like a little four-piece band, too.
Yeah.
So when they do it, they sound like the way we did doing it in the bars years ago.
It must have been great for you when Guardians of the Galaxy totally featured Brandy. You know, you worked in the movie. You work or still work in the movie business in that area. You were a music supervisor, so when that came in.
I don't really do it anymore. I gave that up a couple of years ago, but I was in that business for a long time. On the other side of it, you know, I was working as the music supervisor on a picture or as the executive for a while in charge of music at one of the studios, and my job was to get the rights for songs and make sure that they were clear properly and that they could use it. So, yeah, but this was great with Guardians. I had seen the first one, and not the kind of movie I would normally gravitate towards, but I had heard so many good things about it that I put the DVD in, and I was hooked on it. And then when I heard all the great 70s songs they were using, I was a little, you know, I was a little disappointed that they didn't use Brandy in the first one. I thought, you know, I think that would have fit in. And then when I got the request for the second one, and especially when I saw the script pages and the way James Gunn was going to use it, I was just knocked out.
Well, this has been an absolute honor. Maybe I'll end it by going do 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 do.
Oh yeah, in my head all day.
You guys got good doing that.
We had some harmony there.
Time I'm up in the Boston area, I know who to call for backup.
Well, listen, I mean, I'm trying to someday. I'm going to put together like a whole Ear Moth concert for my foundation, and I would love to have you play Brandy. I mean, I would
be fabulous. Now tell me what are number two and number three? If I'm number one, give me your favorite.
Well, I guess Shannon is a big one.
Key Largo is Key Largo one.
Yeah, Key Largo, Bertie Higgins.
Key Largo. Bertie Higgins. Bertie Higgins. I hear from Bertie every once in a while. Good.
No. And so I mean, occasionally Wildfire. gets in there. Yeah. You know, so
and for some reason Benny Mardones.
Benny Mardones. Into the night.
This sounds like it would be quite an interesting concert.
I think it would. The good thing is that nobody would come there, like when they went to see Looking Glass, they would know what they're going to they'd hear what they were going to expect. You know what I mean?
Exactly. All right. Get a good house band and a nice big house band to be able to handle all of it.
Oh, I could sing every frigging word of it.
Oh, boy. You don't really want that.
Yeah.
Though. No.
Well, Elliot, thank you so much for joining us to give us a little extra sauce on Brandy. You're a fine girl. And we enjoyed the heck out of talking to you.
Thanks, guys. My pleasure. They say, Brandy, you're a fine girl.
You're a fine
what
girl.
A good wife you would be.
Such a fine girl.
Yeah, your eyes could steal a sailor from the sea.
It's all downhill from here. I mean, now that I've interviewed Elliot and talked about Brandy, there's really not much else left to do in the career.
I can't even hear what you're saying now because the song is just full blast in my brain right now.
On the show this week, we discussed the never-ending traffic issues here in the city of Boston and throughout Massachusetts.
Can I just say this? What this came from?
Yeah.
So I'm sitting at home, and I get a call from Greg, and he's like, "Shoo, can we get like a traffic expert on the air or something? I've been sitting here on 128 for like 2 hours. This is ridiculous.
It's the worst.
It's ridiculous.
You can't. You can be on 128 at 11 a.m. or 1 p.m. and you're not going anywhere.
Or 11 p.m. sometimes.
Or 11 p.m. Yeah. Same with the expressway.
Right. And the Pike.
Right. And meanwhile, we spent billions on the Big Dig, and I'm not sure that it did anything.
I'm convinced if Monkey was driving, I would have not gotten that phone call.
Probably,
Monkey would have called me.
Yeah, it would have been.
Shoo, do something about this traffic. Call an expert or something. I'll give you a bottle. Give you a bottle of gin.
So, we went in search of a true traffic expert and came up with David Schrank, who is from Texas A&M University. He's a civil engineer. He focuses on traffic. Sounds very exciting. And we want to talk to David about what exactly is going on here. So, David, thank you for joining us with a little extra sauce on Boston traffic.
I appreciate it.
You have some experience driving our highways and byways here in the Commonwealth, correct?
Yes, I have been up to Boston a few times in the last couple, 3 years, and drive some of the roads like I-495, I-95, I-93. So I've been on some of them, and I've seen some traffic.
Well, we had a discussion on the show the other day, and it appears to me anyway, and to a lot of listeners, that things have not gotten better since the Big Dig. And in fact, over the last year and a half, they've gotten worse. And Shu went out and found you. You're an expert on this kind of thing. Does this happen in major metropolitan areas where you undertake a major project like the Big Dig, and then by the time the project is ready, there's way too many cars, and it basically outdoes its purpose?
Well, I would say that two things there. Yes, it does happen. And in some ways, you almost sort of want it to happen because if a city, an area, a region is not growing, is not increasing in population, is not adding jobs, then it's probably not a good economy going on locally.
Mm.
And so you have the luxury there, and if you want to call it luxury in quotes, of a place where there's a lot of work. A place where there are a lot of schools, and also a place where people want to come and visit. Mm. And so all those things combined means there are a lot of trips occurring in the region, and even support trips, meaning commercial activities, truck deliveries, things that have to happen for all those people to live, work, and play in Boston.
It took someone from out of state to say something actually positive about the traffic we go through every day. It's unbelievable.
Well, I drive in Houston. I drive in Dallas-Fort Worth. So I see some of these things, you know. But as you pointed out about the Big Dig, you know, yes, it takes a lot of time for something that massive to be put in place. But in that amount of time, how many hundreds of thousands of people moved into the Boston region? You know, and we still have relatively low fuel prices now compared to 10 years ago. And so there's the added benefit, I guess you could say, of driving is still relatively comfortable from a price perspective. So there's a lot of people taking vacations, long drives, et cetera, to a place like Massachusetts with the history and obviously the tourism locations like the Cape and such.
How when it comes to the viability of a public transportation system, when you look at some metro areas and traffic issues, how important is it to have a well-running, viable public transportation system? Because we have some issues with ours here, and I wonder if that's a factor.
It's with public transport, actually with transportation period, it's a very localized, you know, system. Mm-hmm. Every city is different. It's laid out differently. It has different needs and et cetera. You know, that being said, an area that is so compact like Boston and, you know, others, New York, et cetera, in the Northeast, public transportation has the opportunity to work pretty well because there's a lot of opportunity to use it.
Yeah.
Unlike the southern and western cities that are so spread out that were designed around the automobile, you know, that's not the case in the Northeast and the Midwest. And so there's the opportunity there, and I'm certain that the transportation agencies in that area are working together to try to figure out how to move people in the most efficient way. Sometimes it's the problem with transportation is it often takes a decade to go from this is a good idea to actually having something out there if it involves concrete or
yeah.
tunneling or bridges and those kind of things, because they don't happen overnight. And unfortunately, overnight, another, you know, 100 families moved into the region.
Right. What mm-hmm. do you, speaking of tunneling, what do you think of Elon Musk and these tunnels that he wants to build under major metropolitan areas?
You know, if you sat here 100 years ago and said, we're going to have big dig projects, yeah. Yeah. people would have gone, huh, that's kind of, you know, wow. And so, you know, I think that the future of transportation and, you know, even our urban living may look very different and be very different than what we know today. I just think back to 10 years ago, and I barely knew how to use a flip phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, much less the one I have now that could put a man on the moon, you yeah. know, back mm-hmm. in the 70s.
Yeah. Yeah, I in Boston for a long time, it's changing now, but there were not a lot of options when it came to affordable living in the city. And I'm wondering if when you look at metropolitan areas and traffic issues, if that's something as well. We have an awful lot of people who need to commute into the city and out of the city to go to their job.
I think that you see that a lot across the country. You know, the downtown living, the lofts and those kind of things are not something a younger person can afford as an entry level salary kind of thing, and so they tend to have to live a little further out, and you know, a family may have to live even further out if they want a standalone home with a lawn and all that kind of thing, just because those prices drop a little bit the further you go. And of course the jobs don't necessarily move out. They may stay in central Boston or at least congregated in the more urban area. And so you tend to have this inward flow in the morning, outward in the evening. And, you know, you hear the stories coming out of California about people with 2 or 3 hour drives because they're living somewhere where they can afford to live, or they like the schools and other things that go along with choosing that house location. But they spend, you know, I don't know how many hours a week driving back and forth into the L.A. Orange Beach area.
I have a question. I want to go back to mass transit for a little bit. And I think it's about more about willingness. And if I may quote the movie Singles, where they had a character who was promoting like a hyper luxurious train that would go in and out of Seattle. And no one would back him because, and this, it was the same answer every time. People love their cars.
Yeah.
You know, they're in control. They have the music they want. They listen to whatever.
You don't have to interact with other people.
Right. So have you ever studied on how, is there a way to lure people? Like, is there a way to get people to actually use the mass transit system more besides the basics being on time?
And free food. Free food always works.
It's
always
free food.
It's free food.
Hot wings.
Yeah, that's right, man.
There's been a lot of studies about that. And you know, your word lure, going back to the original thought about cars and flexibility and all that, you know, there's a certain type of job or employee that, and even family status that allows you to do the public transportation, because I don't necessarily have a, I won't need to maybe leave early and pick up a sick child from school, or I won't need to, my doctor's office is near my work or on a public transit line, so I can, I don't need the flexibility of my car during the day, those kind of things. That type of person it works well for. There's been a lot of efforts around the country to provide those kind of sort of drop of a hat services, that when your child does get sick, you have a way of getting back out to your suburb or whatever to take care of that in some kind of a reverse commute sort of taxi cab sort of thing that would get you out there, because there is the need for that, and that's those things that keep people from being able to jump all in for transit.
I've always wanted to ask a research scientist like yourself this question.
Oh,
when,
no.
When an, if you don't know, we're in trouble. When an object is going 70 miles an hour, a car on a highway, and it's rolling along at 70 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden all of those objects stop for no apparent reason, and you get up to where that traffic is snarled up and driving you up a frigging wall, what is the reason why those cars that were doing 70 unimpeded have to stop?
There's no reason up. There's nothing that says they should have stopped.
What creates the traffic jam on the Pike every day? I mean, it's like everybody, at some point, if everybody's rolling along at 70, why does anybody ever end up doing 25?
A while back, there was a great visual that was created to explain this, and so everybody needs to go get some dry rice and a funnel, and start pouring that rice into the funnel, and at some point in time, it'll actually clog up and quit running through the funnel. That generally is what happens. All it takes is for a few of those grains to get kind of turned sideways and or, you know, not flowing through, and next thing you know, it's clogged up. Well, that same sort of thing happens on a roadway, in that all it takes is one car that is unsure where they're going, or maybe it's 2 18-wheelers back-to-back coming down an entrance ramp that sort of start that effect,
and then the rest of us are screwed.
The real problem is you don't see that at 2 a.m. as much, or at maybe even midday. But when the demand is there and everything's running right on the edge of congestion, you know, all it takes is that first small pilot light, and it next thing you know, red light, red light. Everybody's slowing down, backing up. And by the time you get up there in front of it, you say, nothing happened.
Yeah, right. No, there's nothing. There's never anything up there when you get there because you want you want to yell at somebody. But is my final question for you, David, is here in Boston, does it get any better or does it get worse for us?
I think I don't know that it will get a lot worse, and I say that with a little bit of hope. you know, technology is improving things. Even as something as simple as information,
like Waze, Waze and stuff like that.
Yes, right. Like exactly. You know, 10 years ago, you know, we didn't have all these things. Some areas had the changeable message signs and stuff that would display, hey, there's a crash up at this interchange, you know, avoid it. Well, that was useful, right? You started to adjust your pattern. Now you have these devices that are telling you, you know, maybe how you ought to go about your trip on a day-to-day basis. And soon we'll have cars that are talking to themselves and to the roadway infrastructure. And hopefully when all those things are put together, we have less of that rice in the funnel effect, and we get a little bit more of a smooth transportation flow happening, because if you and I, if I am not certain about where I'm going and I'm driving very cautiously and I may be hitting my brakes a couple times because I'm trying to figure out which lane I need to be in, well, if my car knows where I'm supposed to be going and it doesn't hit brakes and things, then maybe I don't start that boomerang effect of the cars behind me slowing down. So hopefully going forward, technology helps us.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting smarter about these things every day, internationally. We're getting better about how to deal with this and coming up with new ways. So I'm optimistic to the future. Yeah, there's still going to be problems because you have, 5 million people in the Boston area trying to maybe get to the same place on the same day. And so there's going to be problems. But I hope that as we move forward that we're a little bit more we're more efficient because of technology and all the capabilities that gives us.
Well, thanks for, I don't know if you made us feel better, but at least we feel like there's some kind of there's an explanation.
We have a better understanding.
Yeah, we do.
We won't yell as much.
yeah. Well, since this interview is happening in the summer, I'll tell you, go enjoy your weather because you could be in, you know, the South and it'd be 100.
That's true.
All right. All right, that's good. David, thank you so much for joining us with a little extra sauce on the traffic around here.
I appreciate it and enjoyed it.
That's going to do it. Where else can you go to get extra sauce on brandy and the traffic in the city of Boston?
Mm.
Although if you mix the two of those together,
traffic will just be worse.
Well, you're going to be arrested unless you're a passenger.
You're the cause of the traffic at that point.
All right. Thanks a lot for joining us this week for Extra Sauce. And you can subscribe to Extra Sauce, our podcast, on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play, or you can just go to waaf.com/extrasauce. And we'll be back next week.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.